Hello dear listeners, this is Editing Leo speaking. Just a quick heads up, the short mention of the issues of rape and physical harm at two different instances in this episode of the podcast, just so you know. Now, on to the show.
Hello and welcome to episode 9 of the Universe podcast. I'm your host Leo, here with my co-host Charlotte.
Hello.
And our guest Kerry.
Hi.
This is our second attempt at recording the interview with Kerry. As you might have heard on this podcast, the first episode was lost. So now we're doing it again. We're sitting here in the garden of Charlotte's flat. The birds are chirping. The weather's really nice. There's a cat strolling around somewhere around here. And it's just really great. So yeah, I hope you don't mind birds chirping. I certainly don't. And we're going to get started. Kerry, before you start reading the text, I know you've been on a couple of times, but in case people start with episode 9 of the podcast instead of the former ones, could you please introduce yourself again?
Hello, my name's Kerry. I write pretty much everything that comes into my head, so I don't like restricting myself to any genre. I've done a lot of poetry, written 2 songs, and I love writing prose.
That's great. Great variety, so you don't get bored.
No, boredom is not really something I do.
Okay. Good. Do you want to get started then?
All right. The Evil Queen, prologue. Our world is a tapestry woven from 1,000 threads. 1,000 stories intertwined to shape the way we perceive everything around us. Some of them have been told so often that every child could retell them in a heartbeat. We tell these stories to construct a cloak in which we try to wrap the world around us, until we can no longer see her true face. But there are some stories that go unsung and untold, like the hidden underlying threads of a tapestry. They remain invisible in the construct of reality we have created for ourselves. And yet, they are still there. It does not matter how much we try to hide them. It does not matter how many other threads we weave over them. They still remain. For truth is an illusion which we create for ourselves, and no man's truth is identical to another's. Truth is merely the illusion accepted by the majority of society. Truth is the lie most people feel comfortable with. It may be a beautiful lie, it may be a kind one, but it is a lie nonetheless. Therefore, do not trust what you hear. For every legend can be called a truth, even if at its heart it's just an old wife's tale. A distorted story of deceiving words whispered by treacherous tongues. Even the supposedly innocent fairy tales cannot be trusted, for they portray a world that is eternally black and white. But our world is not split into black and white or good and evil. It is painted in a billion colours. And not a single speck is identical to the next. The truth these stories want to show us is a shadow. It is the version which best suited the wordsmith. If you have ever asked yourself why in fairy tales good always triumphs over evil, then ask again, does it really? After all, by the end, there is hardly anyone left who could tell the story of the people who lost. And even if there were anyone left brave enough to speak out against the oppression of the victors, to speak up and tell their version of the truth, who would listen to them? Who would want to hear the story of the losing side? I'll tell you who. No one. We want to hear the tales of mighty heroes vanquishing their terrible enemies. We do not want to hear of pure-hearted, innocent people being defeated by ruthless villains. No, the heroes remain the good ones. as that way everyone can feel more comfortable and we can all rest easier at night. It is a lie, though. We must confront the fact that even our heroes, our noble princes, brave knights and innocent princesses, have their dark secrets they never wished for us to see. For there is always more than one side to a story. Everyone has their own perspective, their own version of what the truth is, and sometimes the version that is best known is nobody's truth at all, but only serves as propaganda to the winning party. Most versions, however, do not get told at all. And yet we judge those people whose stories we have never heard because of how they are portrayed in somebody else's truth. And for these people's sake, we should listen to the stories no one wants to tell. Because only after you have heard every version, only after you have listened to everyone involved, only then will you be able to judge the truth for yourself. Thus now I shall tell you a story that no one wanted to tell. A story that was swiftly swept under the rug of history because it was not as beautiful as the one everyone else was telling. But every story wants to be told, and each and every one of them deserves to be heard. So here is a tale you might have heard before, but never in this way. Here is an old fairy tale, just as the ones we know, and yet still so different from what everybody expects. Here is the tale of the princess, with a reputation white as snow, with hands as red as blood, and a heart as black as ebony. Here is the truth about the girl they called Snow White.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, what we just heard was the prologue to your reinterpretation of a fairy tale that's called The Evil Queen.
Yes.
Is that a correct characterization that I said? It's a reinterpretation.
Well, reinterpretations of fairy tales are usually just, in our current society, are usually just retelling the same tale, just with maybe in live action this time, or as a comic strip. But so I'm not sure if it classifies under what people expect, but I'm not trying to do what people expect, so...
Not doing what people expect is always not too bad.
Always good.
So, yeah. It would be more... Would you say it's an adaptation? An adaptation to different values, maybe?
I'm just...
I guess it's a different side to the story.
Yes, yeah. It's just... Flip a coin.
Yeah.
It could have been either one of them who won, and... Maybe if the Evil Queen had won... We'd be telling a different story now.
So it's a critique.
Yes, in a way. Because, well, I wasn't really always very content with the message stories and fairy tales put out into the world.
Yeah.
The things we teach our children when we read them stories about... How Cinderella went to a ball against her parents' wishes and the prince just fell in love with her because she looked so pretty. That's just not how the world works. And even if it did, it's not the way the world is supposed to be working. So we need to start teaching our children different lessons.
I really like that you mentioned the word truth in your story so many times, and you say, what is truth? We don't know, because everybody has a different truth, because in my studies of philosophy, epistemology is a big part of the studies, and I always love to discuss about what is the truth. Does the truth exist? Who says what is truth? True, and like you said, fairy tales often claim to express universal truths, but I think we need more texts like yours that challenge that. I mean, the only similar text I know is Maleficent. It's not a text, it's a film That's the only one that goes into that direction that is popularly known, I guess.
I'm going to make a big claim now. I've been working on this thing for longer. They stole my idea. I can't prove that because I didn't publish it, but yeah.
Honestly, I must admit that I'm not very, very well-versed as far as fairy tales are concerned, so I'm definitely not the expert here. If I may seem ignorant towards fairy tales, I guess that's my fault.
That's okay. Another thought I had about your text was that I think it would also work really well as a soliloquy at the beginning of a play. And I was wondering if you could imagine writing a play instead of a prose piece.
I could certainly try.
New challenges.
But I'm not sure I'm going to, because as some of your listeners might know, I'm also in the Anglistics University Shakespeare group called SAS. So my daily life involves doing Shakespeare plays, and I'm not sure my self-esteem is quite on that level where I can go like, yeah, I'm going to be a playwright now.
Well, okay, then just once you've finished writing it, give me the rights to make a play out of that, okay? Because I have written one play so far, but my parents work in theatre, as you probably know. So, yeah, I love plays.
I mean, any playwright at one point, before they were a playwright, had to say, I'm going to be a playwright now. I write a play, thus I am a playwright. Well, apart from possible future reinterpretations and readaptions and whatever you want to call it, could you maybe speak about what the original fairy tale means to you personally?
Well, Snow White was never one of my favourite fairy tales, to put it lightly. I mean, it was read to me, and when it was read to me, it was okay because my family members did a great job at reading fairy tales. And also, my grandfather has a selection of fairy tale records.
Ooh,
with
cool.
Accompanying sort of large A4 books, sort of in a comic book format, but not comic books, with enormous drawings in them that are really gorgeous. And we used to just listen to the records and leaf through.
That sounds really nice.
Books. It was wonderful.
So there's a certain connection to childhood memories.
There, with fairy tales, there always is.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, true. And you still like the core of the fairy tale, but you're just not, you don't agree with the values anymore.
Yes, because I kind of grew up and realized that's not the way the world works. Mm. And it kind of really disillusioned me in a way that actually I think it's more hurtful if you keep telling a child that the world is perfect when it's actually not. Also, the way that the perfect world is portrayed in fairy tales is sometimes really not 21st century.
Yeah, and it's so exclusive because usually the princesses are princesses, so they come from very rich family backgrounds, and no fairy tale tells the story of a poor person, for instance.
Well, there's Cinderella.
Yeah, but she's not really poor.
She's not really poor, but she's sort of... She is a servant girl.
The underdog.
Yeah, she is a servant girl, but the thing that I don't like about Cinderella is, who falls in love with someone the first time they see them? Before they've had even a proper conversation. You can't fall in love with someone at a ball. It's like, you need at least a proper conversation. Like, a longer one over a multitude of hours, and not from And maybe not in the evening hours from 8 to midnight.
When you're drunk. You probably don't remember everything the way it really was.
Well, this is probably infatuation then.
Yeah, but I mean...
Yeah,
I
but that doesn't last.
This is the old story of, does the concept of love at first sight exist or not? There are people who say it does and people who say it doesn't. I mean... You can never, again, this is a matter of, we don't know the truth, because there are two sides to one story.
I think it's mostly a problem of the way we reinterpret our memories to fit the narrative we're living right now. If you are in love with somebody, you will reinterpret all your memories relating to that person in the narrative of, yes, I am now in love with this person, and... Then feelings that you might have had that was maybe just infatuation or just attraction suddenly already become love because, you know, it's the fact.
I get it, but still I think what one can get within a few seconds of meeting somebody is sympathy. I think you can have strong sympathy or antipathy for somebody even if you don't know them.
I agree with that, but still, you can't tell a child a fairy tale saying that basically claims, well, if you meet this one person at a ball and they seem rather nice to you, go ahead and marry them. This will be a happy marriage.
Of course not.
This will go absolutely fine.
Also, I mean, the message is they will only love you if you look very pretty. If you don't look as pretty as all the other princesses, the prince won't even notice you.
Exactly. I mean...
And then that's not real love, of course, because if he would really love her, he would have noticed her if she were the needle in a haystack. Or whatever. And did you ever notice that the princes in all these fairy tales that we know, like in the Disney versions, never have names?
Actually, I think Aurora's prince is called Philip.
Apart from that one, and the one in Frozen, they have names. I think with Snow White and Cinderella and all
it's just
things,
charming.
I never noticed that. No.
He never has
even
a
though
name.
They're not charming. They're creepy. I mean, Snow White's Prince Charming is a necrophiliac.
Yes, he is.
But, yeah.
Also, he doesn't care very much for consent.
That too. I mean, they all have a consent problem. I mean, in the original Sleeping Beauty fairy tale, like the way original that was written for adults, as Grimm's fairy tales actually were, the prince actually doesn't only kiss her, but he rapes and impregnates Sleeping Beauty before she wakes up.
Nice.
So, yeah, consent is a bit of a problem in those tales.
I guess the prince just didn't care because he knew he was the prince. Anyway, he was going to be king, so he could do whatever he wanted.
Royalty!
I mean, this is still a message we teach boys today, that they can do
anything just because they're boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, and girls, we teach, if you look nice, someone will fall in love with you and you'll live happily ever after as a housewife with children.
Yeah, what we also teach them is, I don't know how many American rom-coms there are about somebody who's in love with somebody and this other somebody isn't in love with them. And then they say, I'm just stalking them until they love me. And then that actually works. And then it's like, what the hell? If somebody would stalk me like that, I would call the police, probably.
I'd have a different idea for that, but...
I mean, all these messages are just...
What is your different
stupid
idea now?
It might be involve a bit of criminal activities, but...
you mean a different idea about what you do to a person stalking you?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Do you have any bigger philosophical program, any philosophical ideas that you incorporated into the text would ring a bell to me was at least some form of false consciousness that we don't really live in, like, we live through the stories we tell each other, and these stories don't really reflect what's actually going on.
Well, I want people to see that there's always more than one side to a story, and that sometimes what you hear about somebody else does not reflect who they actually are. Because most people, it depends if you ask their friends and which friends you ask, everyone will tell you something different about that person. So the thing you should actually ask if you want to get to know someone is ask them who they are, not wait for somebody else to tell you. And I think stories work exactly the same way. It's you need to see it from everyone's perspective. Even though, before you judge a person, a character in a fairy tale, for example, you should hear their version of that story.
I often have the need to hear the stories of some characters that are kind of not given a voice in books. Sometimes characters that I really, really like and feel like they are so great, why are they not
the main character?
Yeah, or why are they not even given the opportunity to speak for themselves? That's why I really like that there's a book where a woman wrote Pride and Prejudice from Mr. Darcy's point of view. And that was really fun to read, because then it's like, okay, Elizabeth is so arrogant sometimes and she doesn't even know it, and she tells him that he's arrogant. It's hilarious.
That would be probably a fun idea to read parallel.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Different characters often can, I mean, naturally they can offer very different perspectives, with some more than others. I do find myself sometimes curious about, you know, what could this person have told us about everything that went on? They might be better informed because they're not, you know, they're maybe just onlooking or not on the forefront. You're quite passionate about this. So much is clear. Are you going to write more of these fairy tales?
Well, I'm trying. I'm planning on making a book, but plans are a difficult thing. Usually when you make a plan, you end up at least plan Z before anything starts working. So I'm just writing as much as I manage and see where that leads me.
For our listeners, in case you want to read up on the stories that we present or bring weekly to the universe meetings, there's old booklets in the English and American Studies Library where you go in. On the right side, there's a small shelf in the student corner, and I think on the upper level, on the right side of that shelf, there's a small binder. It's labeled Universe, and there you'll find all the old booklets that you can read up on stories if you want to and if you have time.
Why did you choose this text to read on the podcast today?
Well, I was thinking, what would I like? What would be an introduction to me? And then I was like, well, this text sums things up pretty well, I think, so...
Okay, cool.
Do you think this... Well, you said, would be an example that's good for you as a person. Would you say this is representative for who you are?
I mean, I wrote it. Everything I write is kind of representative of who I am, but...
That's true, yeah. Beaten at my own
Except
game.
For maybe university homework, because... I kind of have to write that.
Yeah.
So.
I really liked the style of language you used. It's reminiscent, certainly, of fairy tale language, more than reminiscent even. It's very, you know, it's a very good version of fairy tale language, but it's also then, it's a nice dichotomy to see that language used to describe something else, that, or not to talk about a story, but talk about ideas and a philosophical approach. I found that was really cool. Did you practice this style of writing?
No. But I've always liked sort of writing this sort of... I'm not sure if I call it direct, but... Because... But... Yeah, most of my shorter things that I write that are sort of a bit philosophical tend to turn out something like this, a bit accusatory.
Mm-hmm. J'accuse.
Yeah, j'accuse.
My terrible French pronunciation. At it again.
But I think it says a lot about the character this is written from, you know what I mean? Like, the Evil Queen probably expresses herself differently than some...
This is actually not her talking. There's a narrator who has been told this story. I'm not telling you by whom, because that is a spoiler. But there is a narrator who has been told all these fairy tales from different perspectives and who's writing them all down.
And will you put all of them in the same book, or are they all separate books?
I'm planning on sort of making a fairy tale book for Grimm's Fairy Tales at the moment. I'm working on that.
Okay, so this is one person, the narrator, who meets up with different people and they tell this person the stories from different points of view.
I don't recall having said people.
Okay, well... beings. I guess.
It's a fairy tale. You can get creative. Yes.
True, very true. I like that idea that there's always one person, kind of one person going through different stories by being told them.
I mean, it's what the Grimm brothers did. They went from place to place collecting fairy tales and collecting stories. They just weren't that thorough.
There's a character like this. I don't know, have you read Patrick Rothfuss's Kinkula Chronicles?
It's on my list. And I feel bad admitting it that I haven't read it yet.
So good. If you don't have the books, I can borrow them to you. They are amazing. And there's a character like this in there. Chronicler.
That is usually a very safe thing to get me to read things, to lend me a book, because then I have the pressure of sort of, I have to give this back.
You said that you were read fairy tales when you were a child. Now I'm wondering, did you read them later on when you were older, only in German or in English as well? How did that happen?
Well, whenever I read fairy tales, I usually do it in German, because I have one really beautiful fairy tale book that has the exact same drawings.
Of course, it makes sense. The Grimm fairy tales were originally written in German, so it makes sense to read them in German.
That too. And I mean, I have this like really beautiful fairy tale book with the most beautiful drawings for fairy tales that I have ever seen. I mean, I might be kind of biased because I grew up with them. So they represent everything in my childhood is represented in those drawings. It's my grandfather sitting in his armchair with four grandchildren piled up on him. I also have a really beautifully fake leather bound Grimm's Fairy Tale tome with gold lettering on it, so that's also in German. So when I read them, I usually read them in German.
And have you ever read a fairy tale in English?
All of the ones that I've already written, I have read in English and in German.
Okay.
Because I usually have both of the versions right next to me while I'm writing. So I'm working with the original source material, using air quotes. As to make them sound more like the tales we're used to, so to intertwine my story better, so I'm not conflicting anything too much. That
I see. And have you noticed any major differences between the German and the English texts?
Well, sometimes I sit there and go like, I could have done a better translation of this. but most of the times it's really a faithful translation. Okay, cool. And it depends on what time you pick up the translation and what time your version of the fairy tale was picked up, because as we've recently established in an experiment we did you organized. Every time you tell a story, it changes.
Yes.
We've, as context for the listener, for the listeners, the universe organized an event at the English department where the premise was to see how stories change as they are retold. So we had stories to start out with, read those out loud to another person, and the other person then had to retell and rewrite and then retell them from memory. And yeah, the changes were
quite significant. Pronounced.
Yeah, the changes were pretty big.
It was really fun.
Yeah.
And you can read those texts on our website if you're interested.
Yes.
I've also actually read fairy tales in French because I have two French fairy tale books from fairy tales.
Do they have different fairy tales?
No, they're all four of my fairy tale books are Grimm's fairy tales.
Okay.
I have one fairy tale book that is Hauff's fairy tales. I don't know if you've heard of William Hauff.
Nope.
He's also a fairy tale writer, and he writes he writes darker fairy tales.
Okay.
Let's put it like this. Mm-hmm. So they're also fairy tales that I grew up with. Which, I don't know, maybe now this explains a lot about me, or it doesn't explain anything about me. Who knows? People will do with that information what they please anyway.
Did you know that Goethe even wrote a book called Das Märchen?
I think I've heard about it.
I've always wanted to read it, but I never found it anywhere, strangely. I have to go to one of those great bookshops in Morava or something like that in the first district. They probably know about it.
But I know that Hauff has a fairy tale character called the fairy tale, because his prologue for his entire fairy tale book starts with the fairy tale being really, really sad because people don't like her anymore.
Yeah.
And they all think she's ridiculous and just boring and things.
Mm.
And they just don't want to talk to her. But they do want to talk to her brothers, the Dreams. And so now she's really heartbroken, and her mother, Queen Fantasy, decides to send her to Earth one last time, dressed as a merchant of sorts, and she sneaks down there, but the guards recognize her. So they don't want to let her into the city, and then she just paints them a story into the air with like images and pictures until they fall asleep. And then an old man comes along, notices that she's totally lost in her pictures and telling of the story that she hasn't even seen that the guards are already asleep and she could just sneak past them, and goes, you know what, I have a place for you. And he just takes her with him to his place, where there's a bunch of little children, and she tells the children the fairy tales. And, of course, the children love the fairy tales, so now our little fairy tale is happy again.
Cool. That's a really sweet nice story.
Yeah. It's the sweetest part of this fairy tale book. After that, there's, like, the first fairy tale is a thing about a doctor who gets his hand chopped off because he accidentally kills a girl who he thought was dead.
Okay.
Fun.
A little bit darker, I yep understand.
Tiny bit darker. Then there's a ghost ship, like a bit like the Flying Dutchman, mm-hmm, but... Sort of,
who do you have in mind then when you write your fairy tales? Those kids, like in this fairy tale story, or the adults who grew up with these fairy tales?
I mean, most of the time I just write for myself.
Okay.
And I think, what would... Because... I just think, what story would you like to have told? Because... That's sort of the chance you have as a writer. You can tell the story you want to tell or you want told to you.
Mm.
But it's also with a focus on children and morality issues. Because, of course, as I've mentioned before, I am not happy.
Actually, this makes me think... It would be lovely to use a text like this one in a class, like in an English class room at a school. So it would be a really, really nice idea to have a text like that and give it to discussion for people, like, what do you think about this? Is this a fairy tale? Is it a modern fairy tale? You know what I mean? Like, have them discuss about it and think about it and think about it, that there are so many more ways of telling one story.
And it could also start sort of a creative writing assignment, yes, like give exactly them the prologue and say...
How does the story continue?
You've now heard the prompt.
Yeah.
Evil Snow White, do with that what you will.
Exactly.
Let's compare next class, which one is better, yours or mine? Spoiler alert, mine.
You'd be a great teacher.
This is why I'm in the BA, not the BED.
Do you remember the first creative text you ever wrote? And do you remember what inspired you to write it?
That would be a long time ago. And my memory of the time is good, but not where writing is concerned. The first text I actually remember writing was the first draft of the novel I'm working on at the moment.
So you started to write in English?
No, I started to write in German, but I now transferred the first draft into English.
I see, okay.
And reworked it a bit, mm-hmm, to not sound like a 13-year-old anymore.
I see. Mm-hmm. Probably a good idea. Yeah.
But that I wrote after... taking cliff walk in Little Brittany, and for some reason thinking to, probably because my parents told me stay away from the cliff in case you fall off, for some reason my mind went, what would happen if I fell off that cliff?
The old call of the void again.
Basically I stood on that, it wasn't a big cliff. It was, it just had, it was just a couple of meters above the sea and there were a couple of rocks in it. But anyway, so I was standing there and was thinking, what would happen if somebody pushed me off that cliff now? And then I started imagining who pushed me off that cliff and why, and
That's how your first story came about.
Yeah.
Okay. Why not? I sometimes have the feeling that women who appear in fairy tales are either depicted as very sweet, beautiful, and innocent, or as evil and mad. So I was wondering if it was one of your goals with your fairy tales to change this portrayal of women.
I mean, I'm certainly trying to do a more realistic representation of the world. I'm not sure if I arrive at this realistic representation of the world because my worldview is a bit cynical, I think. Occasionally. But, so I definitely try and make them more human, not as one-dimensional. Sort of have them have actual emotions. And yeah, reason to do things. And sometimes the prettier person in the room is the most horrible person the universe has ever created.
Exactly.
Koth. Snow White. Koth. I don't like this god.
Our universe, because we have no horrible people in our universe group, of course.
Yes, I mean, our universe is our universe is absolutely different.
You should come sometime, good listeners.
I mean, our universe also works on the different rules, so...
It is, after all, ruled by a woman.
Yes.
With an iron fist.
Very true.
Well, but as long as we bow to her, we don't have a problem.
She's our Khaleesi.
So, as a next step, after you've finished writing all of these new fairy tales... What do you want to do with them? Do you want to release them in any way, shape or form?
Well, I mean, provided I've got enough fairy tales, I would really like it if my grandfather illustrated them, because I love his style of drawing. He's made a lot of beautiful drawings for me.
Is your grandfather an artist?
I say he is. I mean, he's not officially recognised as such, but he definitely should be.
I don't think there's a body officially recognising artists.
I mean, none of us are officially like recognised as writers, but it still doesn't mean that we aren't writers.
Yeah. If you do art, you're an artist.
Exactly.
He is the most accomplished painter I have ever had the fortune to meet. Which is probably because he grew up around a lot of artists, so he has a really close relationship to that. But yeah, I just really want him to illustrate them.
Okay.
And then when they're illustrated, will you publish them?
I would certainly like that. But once they're illustrated, it's sort of a thing that's not in my hands anymore.
Mm.
Yeah, I know.
Before you publish your work, is there any place on the internet where people can find it or other things that you've written?
Well, not my fairy tales, but I do have a couple of poems, rantings, and both my songs on an internet forum called Exilion.
I will put that in the show notes as usual. How about you, Charlotte?
I have a blog.
Ooh, tell us about your blog.
It's called...
Charlotte's Web.
Almost. No, it has a German name. It's called Die Tintenfisch. And it's a WordPress blog, so you can find it under dietintenfisch.wordpress.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there you will find a mix between my German and my English writings. And you can leave comments, which I'm always kind of happy about. Yeah, that's my blog. Check it out.
Check it out, yo. Yeah, as I always say, you can find me on Twitter if you want to tweet at me, scream at me. Please don't scream at me, just tweet. I'm at Leo Engelmeier.
This was episode 9 of the Universe podcast. If you enjoyed it and would like to hear more of us, make sure to subscribe to the Universe podcast wherever you're listening to it. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review and tell us what you think, which would help other people find our podcast. It would really be greatly appreciated.
and tell all your friends about it. Comments, questions? You can reach us on Twitter, we're at PodUniverse, on Facebook, or via our email address, podcast@universe.univ.org. This podcast was hosted and edited by Leonhard Engelmeier. The co-host was Charlotte Zertz. Our guest today was Kerry Whitman. I hope you visit this planet in the universe again. In the meantime, stay safe in space. Thanks for listening.